If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Well, you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode. This episode is brought to you by sportsshoes.com, as always. And we are hoping to get you a very special discount code very, very soon. So keep your ears and eyes out for that one. Ellie Leather on the podcast today. Matt sat down with her this week to chat about a nice recent PB over 800 meters and what life is like for the US-based Brit out as a pro for Under Armour. But just before we get into that episode, just wanted to give you guys a heads up that we will be reviewing all the action this weekend. Loads of races all the way from the Fast 5000 to the BMC, and of course previewing some races coming up as well with Oslo Diamond League around the corner and some very fast times being chased indeed. Of course, as well as the British 10K champs that are going down in Birmingham next Saturday. Matt and I are going to be there bringing you guys with some content as well. So again, look out for that. But yeah, we'll hand over to Matt and Ellie Leather for this week's main episode, and keep your eyes and ears peeled for the next installment of the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening as always, and we'll catch you guys very, very soon.
Well, hello and welcome back, everybody. I am joined this week by the fantastic Ellie Leather, 406 1500 meter runner, 202 800 meter runner, nice recent PB for her, and a professional athlete. And is becoming a professional athlete, Ellie, was that always a dream of yours?
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely when I started running about 8 or 9 in Bristol, UK, Westbury Harriers. And yeah, since then I was like, okay, this is what I don't want to sit in an office job. I want to run. So yeah, for sure.
That early on, because not many I guess admit or, you know, believe they can be a professional runner that early on.
Yeah, I guess I mean I was very fortunate that I had a coach from the age of 8 up to when I went to college, so 17. I had the same coach, and he was very much like, I want you to be successful when you're in your 20s, in your 30s. So it's a very slow progression. So, you know, I made English schools, I did those things, but it was like, you know, no one knew who I was. It was just kind of like, I was enjoying it. I was progressing, but progressing very slowly. So I think that I always knew it's what I wanted to do, because, you know, you watch the Olympics and you're like, yeah, that, you know, I want to be up there. But it seemed very, very far away, and honestly seemed very far away until 2 years ago. Like, it was still, I've definitely been a slow progressing athlete, but I think it's gonna hopefully set me up well for a long career, and I've had next to no injuries my whole career. So I think whilst it's been slow, I've noticed the progression, and it's been exciting the last couple of years making big jumps and seeing okay, now that dream of when I was 10 or something is a little bit more realistic.
I think that is definitely a theme of yours from the outside. You just progress so steadily. And I was going to ask, you know, what were the reasons for that? But I guess just consistency and taking it slow, right?
Yeah, I think it was just I went to training maybe twice a week, for the most part. It wasn't, and then I was a big swimmer, so I swam a lot. So I was still, which I also think probably set me up pretty well too. Just, you know, you're still staying fit, you're still training a lot. And when you're swimming, you're training a lot. So I think that was a big part of it. And yeah, I think just having a lot of people around me trying to guide me in the right way. If you don't make it when you're I don't know, run for England when you're 12. Like, it's okay. You can run for Great Britain when you're 28, you know, and then that's what we will remember at that point. So I think, it was just a lot of people around me caring for me and for me making the right decisions. Like going to, when I went to the US, you can very quickly get like dragged into the wrong school, the wrong coach, the wrong place, and just kind of like want to go to the big schools. But I think I very much went to smaller schools and chose a coach that I knew would kind of guide that slow progression and then eventually end up hopefully signing a contract and joining a pro team. So yeah, I think it was just being around the right people, understanding that you have to like just the little things like fueling yourself your whole career, doing strength work, like all this stuff. I just think I'm just very fortunate to be surrounded by great coaches and great family that wanted me to be still running in my 30s. So, yeah.
That's a good lesson. But how did you hold back? You know, you're someone who, like you said, you acknowledged at the age of 8-10 years old that you want to go to Olympic Games. So how were you, you know, even then still just running 2 days a week? How did you hold back from your passion?
I mean, I guess when I'm that young, like just going along to Westby Harriers, it just seems like, I don't know, this is fun, sure. I mean, in school, you're like the girl that runs cross country. So it's very much like, oh, that's not a cool thing to do. So it's definitely, I think part of that, it's like, you just kind of have to like keep going. And like, it is a very, I think that it can just be quite hard to like keep going in those moments where you're like, okay, I'm 14, 15, I still haven't really done anything. Like I haven't, you know, I want to go to college in America. I want to do this. I want to do that. But yeah, it is hard to keep going in the moment. But I think that, I don't know, just knowing that running is very much a consistency like based sport. Like, I think I just kept telling myself like, okay, when I'm, you know, 26, 27, like the work that I'm doing now and just the years of just running and keep going, that will pay off then. But I think that, you know, when you're young, you don't, you know, I wasn't arguing with my coach. It was just like, okay, come Monday, Thursday. I was like, okay, sure. Like, I'm not going to argue with that. I was just having some fun and enjoying cross country, enjoying racing. But I think definitely in college and like the year before going to college, so around 16, 17, 18, like those 3 years, I think I found it difficult, like still not seeing like the results I wanted and seeing everyone around me. But now, yeah, I guess it all pays off. But I mean, there were some points in college where I felt like I need to do more, but you know, I'm glad I kind of didn't listen to that.
Because it would have been the easiest thing in the world probably to train more and do more. Like you say, when you look at other results out there. So who were you holding yourself back, or was it ever difficult to just keep limiting yourself and kind of sticking to that long-term plan?
Yeah. And I think it's like again, like I said, I'm just very grateful to have been surrounded by a lot of people that were guiding me and people that kind of saw the kind of athlete I was. I'm not necessarily like, okay, go and run 100 miles a week and that's how you're going to progress. I think we've kind of learned that it's like, okay, a little bit less is more with me, but you just have to like that then in itself, okay, maybe that means it's going to take you a couple more years to see the results that you want, kind of thing. So I think it's just about like finding out the athlete you are. And I've really found that out like the last 2 years. Like now I think we've really got it. But I think that, yeah, you just have to like, it's not that I wasn't like doing anything. Like in college, I was definitely working hard. Like the people I lived with in my house, like we were very much like, just like staying in most weekends, like very boring, probably not the college career that a lot of people have. But I just think I just kept telling myself like, okay, you're doing all the right things. And like I had a goal like by my, then COVID hit and I was like, okay, I'm gonna stay an extra year in the US, like this is my kind of chance. Like I started seeing things in COVID, like let's do this. And then yeah, year five, I think I just found that new like just like drive to one, like, okay, this is my last year, like can we try to see if I can get a pro deal out here and make this happen. So I think it was just like mixed a little bit of like, okay, I've done all this hard work, like I don't want to do it for nothing, like let's try to make this last year the best year. And then I end up having the best year of my career, so, and then it set me up for now. So yeah, it was definitely all worth it. And I guess it was a mixture of like coaches telling me like, you know, you're doing so well, you're consistent, you're not injured, you're like, this is gonna pay off. And like yourself too. Like, I think I've always told myself in my career that, like, it's going to be, it's not successful based on, like, if I make five teams, if I run 350 something, if I do this, if I do that, like, that's not what's going to make it successful for me. It's going to be like, did I enjoy my career? Did I go to the races I wanted to race at? Did I meet the people I wanted to meet? Yeah. Did I make friends for life, kind of thing? Like, that's more of the success that I think I'll base it off of. So I think just having that mindset has just, like, allowed me to not, you know, go fall into holes and kind of, like, go down the wrong path sometimes. So yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping that it all pays off by the next Olympics, but we'll see.
The way you're progressing, you know, it looks good right now. 3 seconds PB in the 800 just a few days ago. I think that's really interesting at college. You know, it sounds like, yeah, you had your head down, you were doing all the right things. Did you ever feel a bit of frustration if someone was sort of faster than you and weren't taking the sport sort of as seriously or doing all those little 1% that you were doing?
Yeah, for sure. I think it can get definitely frustrating, and definitely in college when I started to feel like more frustrated, like that I hadn't got the results that I wanted to. And, you know, you see all the other girls in college doing this, doing that. And yeah, it definitely gets frustrating. But again, I think it's like, I also, you know, would tell myself a lot and kind of just like, I get to do this sport. I get to be in college in America and doing this, and I'm missing out. Like, you do miss out on a lot of things being an athlete. Like, that's just the way it is. But then we get to experience, like, so many things that, you know, someone that wasn't on a team in college, they would never get to experience. So I think it's just, like, seeing both sides of it and understanding, like, okay, this is frustrating sometimes. Like, I want to go out and do this. I want to do this. I want to do this. But this is, you know, our careers are relatively short in the scheme of things. Like, you know, you're not like running in the Olympics age 60 something. Like, you know, it's like you do have quite a short window. And I think it's just like reminding yourself of that. And, you know, I'm so grateful for running and everything it's given me. And it's given me just like, it's made me meet some of the best people I've ever met, see some incredible places and all that stuff. So I think it's just like when you really go back to that and you're like, yeah, wait, this is like a lot of people would love to be in my position. So you kind of just have to like keep going. Yeah.
Let's roll back the years a little bit, because the thing you've spoken about, those people in your corner, was one of those your great aunt, Diane Leather. Do you want to talk about her?
Oh, yeah.
First woman to break 5 minutes for the mile, literally a couple of weeks after Bannister did, right? In 1954.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, yeah, like 20 something days after. Yeah. No, it's pretty awesome. I guess when I was like kind of like old enough to actually understand like who she was and stuff. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, we still like look through, we were actually looking through photos a couple weeks ago. My aunt, my dad's sister was sending me some photos of like me at, you know, just some weddings that she was at and stuff, all this stuff. I mean, I was obviously way younger than she was at that time, but yeah, it's cool. I think it's just like the more like I was still learning stuff about what she had, like I had no idea she was like cross country champion and all this stuff. And it's like, okay, like you achieved an incredible amount. It just unfortunately was at a time where like, I mean, she wasn't even allowed to compete in the Olympics until the last year of her retirement. So it's just like an unfortunate era for that in that sense. But I mean, it's pretty incredible that like someone in my family, you know, that I've spoke to, that I've seen all this stuff kind of did that. And so to be like the only, there's a lot of tennis players in my family. My siblings all play tennis. I'm not good at tennis. So I think it's just cool to be like, okay, it's me and Diane in the family running. And yeah, it's pretty cool to like continue that. And I mean, it's crazy that now like we're trying to break 4 in the mile. So it's pretty crazy in that sense. But yeah, I think it's just, it's a fun fact. And it's like, sometimes if I'm like, you know, if it's a bad workout or a bad day or something's not going right, I'm like, no, this is in my family. Like, I think this is meant to be for me, you know? So it's like my little like secret, like mind thing that I tell myself sometimes, you know?
I can only imagine how valuable that is to have someone like her sort of in your corner. But it sounds like your parents I don't know what level your siblings play tennis at, but they understand elite sport. And, you know, for someone who has had a steady progression and you have taken the long-term approach, they've clearly supported you through that. and they haven't put too much kind of pressure on you to deliver at X period. Like when you're 21, they're like, right, come on, where's the results? Otherwise you need to, you know, crack on with life.
Yeah. No, I think it's like, well, my three siblings, they all play tennis. My older brother and sister, they played in college too in California. My sister is so currently there. So, and then my little brother is very good too. So they're very at a very high level for their sport also. And I think that my parents were, my dad went to Florida to play golf when he was my age. And he was at a high level on golf too. So I think it's always like sport's always been in our family for sure. But it's always been like, you know, if like dad still tells us today, it's like if you, like the minute you're not really enjoying it and it's not fulfilling you, it's not giving you what you want in your life, then you move on and you find something else in your life. Like it's not, you know, for him, like his, like our successes, like his kids is going to be, again, like, did you enjoy it? Did you get out of it what you wanted to get out of it? Great. And, you know, there's so much more to life also outside of running. And I think we're just very fortunate with, you know, the friends around me, the family around me. It's like reminding me a lot, like, that you get to do this, and there's running is a massive part of my life, but it's not my whole life. I have so many other things outside of it. So I think it's just, yeah, very fortunate to be in a very good environment. And yeah, it's never been like, you have to do this, you have to do this. It's always been, I mean, they love coming to watch us race and play tennis and all this stuff. So it's a pretty cool thing for them too. So
have you ever had that a period where perhaps you weren't enjoying the sport as much as you always have done or you want to?
Yeah, I think the first year out of college, so 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, was very difficult. I came off like the best year of my career so far in college. And then after that, I felt like the first year was super tough. I don't think, like, even if you're like not continuing your running career, if you're just going into a job or moving on to something else in your life, I don't think enough people talk about like how scary that can be, like just being thrown into the real world. And like, you're in a bubble in college and university. And I think then you just get thrown out and you're supposed to figure it out. So I think that was definitely the hardest year probably of my life. I had a lot of just different things going on and things outside of running that were just, it was just a lot. And I just took that year to like really take a deep breath. And then by the second year, I'd kind of like fell into the routine again. But yeah, there's definitely been tough parts for sure.
I think that's it. When you leave college, you leave university, you turn pro. Mm-hmm. Many people think it's going to be better, but actually that sort of support system that you had a lot more people who were sharing the same journey as you that you could relate to, coaches, staff, etc. You're almost lonelier, aren't you, as a pro? Did you feel that?
Oh yeah, I would say the first year as a pro was like the hardest year ever. I don't know if anything will actually come close to that, which sounds really dramatic, but it just is. You're like thrown into the pro world and now you're going up against Olympians, against, you know, I was running for 10, I think, and you're going up against 350 something runners and you're supposed to just like figure it out and kind of like throw yourself in there. And that can be really good. Like that can be what pushes you, but it's also like in college when you're racing, you're like, the girls are just much closer together in times. I mean, it's progressed so much now since I was there in the last 3 years, but I think you're just like, yeah, it's a massive, massive jump, like more than you probably like think it's going to be. And then, yeah, it's just mentally, it's super hard to kind of like keep going and, you know, figuring out like every part of your life. And you're also just now, I think it was about figuring out like, okay, what does my like whole life look like, if that makes sense? Like now you just have running and you have like you just have running, like that's your job. So it's like, you're trying to balance, okay, this is what I've always wanted to do, but also this is like kind of crazy. Like I just get up and run and that's my day done, you know? Like and then if that's not going well, it's like, it's pretty hard to kind of balance like all those emotions. But I mean, it works out in the end, but at first it's definitely really tough.
That was going to be one of my questions, you know, what is something that isn't often spoken about, because everyone does like to play off that being a professional athlete is amazing, which it is, but there are some hard parts to it. And what is the hardest part of being a professional distance runner?
Ooh, I would say probably like the, I don't want to really use the word sacrificing, but you're kind of like missing out on things that a lot of your non-athlete friends in their 20s are doing. And, you know, that's the part where I talk about like having like things outside of running. I think that's been the biggest thing for me, is making sure I have like, you know, the right people around me, the things I enjoy. So you can still do a lot of things outside of your career that don't hinder your running career, but it's like the things that you probably most want to do, you can't do those until you retire. So I think that's probably the hardest part. And also the traveling and being, you know, I'm based in Colorado for most of the year. So it's like, I didn't see my family in college because I went to college in America and now I'm out there again. So it's like, you don't get to speak to your family as much and see them as much. So I think those are probably the two hardest parts, I would say.
Yeah, just on the NCAA and your family's relationship with the NCAA, this is quite unique that all of them have gone to college and your dad went there. So I guess growing up, were you much more aware of like NCAA, you know, scholarships to go and compete in the NCAA more than probably the next runner?
Oh no, I had no idea that like that was even a thing. And then about 6 months before, I didn't really want to go to school, like university here. Yep. Like I was going to take like a little bit of like a break just to figure out what I wanted to do. Like I wanted to keep running, but wasn't sure what I wanted to study and just like didn't really know what to do. And then, yeah, just one day dad was like, well, I went out to Florida. Like maybe you could try to go to the US. And I was like, oh, that sounds fun. So I kind of just researched it a little bit. And then, yeah, literally like 6 months later, I was just like on a plane to California.
So are you the oldest of your siblings then? And then they sort of all followed you out as well, right?
Yeah, I'm the oldest. Yeah, I started school in California and then transferred to Cincinnati, Ohio. So two very opposite places in the US, but ended up being the best decisions. And then, yeah, then they, my brother's graduated now too, but yeah, they went out to California and they love it. My brother just, he's out there right now in California, even though he's graduated. Like, yeah, it's a pretty cool place that they went to school. So
I can imagine that'd be a hard lifestyle to let go of.
Yeah.
Just quickly then, on Fresno and Cincinnati, like two schools, what was the coaching like there and why those schools?
So the first one, Fresno State, when I was like kind of a little bit rough, but like just kind of like figuring out where I wanted to go, I was like, California sounds nice, sure. Like that's because it's such a big place in the US, like you kind of have to just like pick a state and kind of go for it, especially when you don't know anything. So I was like, okay, California. And then yeah, the coach at Fresno State, you're kind of like with an agency and then coaches can reach out and stuff. And I started talking to the coach at Fresno State, and yeah, just I really liked like what she was building at Fresno and kind of liked how it sounded, so gave that a go. And then after 2 years, I felt like all the coaching changed, and there was just a lot of change at Fresno. So I felt like, okay, I've progressed a lot my first year and a half, but it's not, I'm still not, I don't think this is going to be the place where I make the big jumps that I need to. So anyway, went into the portal and went on a few visits, but ultimately ended up really liking my visit to Cincinnati, Ohio. And Lara was the coach there, Lara Rogers, and she was actually my coach in my first 2 years of my professional career also. She was the coach at Under Armour. So yeah, I was with her for a few years. So that was cool to like kind of stick with the same coach into my professional career.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the team at Cincinnati was awesome. That's where I kind of met the friends that I'll have for life and made really cool connections. And yeah, so I'm definitely grateful for, it's a little bit of a random place to go to school in Ohio, but yeah, that will like forever be one of the best decisions I've ever made. I don't think I'd be sat here with the support of Under Armour and, you know, would never have met my team now. And so I think it all leads to where you are. So yeah, I'm super grateful for that decision.
Yeah, did you have a backup plan if you hadn't have had that brilliant last year in the NCAA? Like what was going to be your idea to kind of still pursue your career?
I think like full honesty, I was like, no, this is going to be my year. Like I want to stay in the US. Like I'm doing this. So I think I kind of always had that mindset. But yeah, there was definitely like the part of me like, okay, if this doesn't work through, what like doesn't work out, I can go home. And there's, you know, there's a lot of setups here too in the UK. Like there was definitely options. Yeah, so I would have most likely come home and just kind of like, I knew a couple people at Birmingham or, you know, places like that. I think I would have just ended up somewhere like that and taken a slightly different approach, but still was going to be running. It was just like, I felt like the pull to stay in the US up until like LA 2028 and then probably dip back to Europe at that point. But yeah, so it was always the goal to like, okay, LA 2028, let's, I really want to be in the US, like, let's do this kind of
thing. Why? What is that pull to remain in the US? Is it just training setups and, you know, training partners, yeah, easy access to altitude, all that like kind of things?
Yeah, you just get so used to the life over there. I was in college for 5 years, and I really enjoyed, like, I mean, there's some really cool places to run out there, like where I am now, Boulder, Colorado, and, you know, Flagstaff and all those places, like, they're really amazing. And I think it's just the opportunities and the people, like the support out there and the facilities and all this stuff, I would say just is like a little better than places you can get here. Well, at the time, I think it's, again, I think a lot has changed in the last 3 years, honestly, since I left college. But I think it was just like, I love this. I love the style out here, like the lifestyle out here. And it was just like, I want to stay. I think I always knew that at some point, like, I want to come back to Europe because, like I said, I've been away from family and friends for so many years. So definitely at some point I want to be based back in here or in Europe or somewhere. I don't know. My dream is to live in Switzerland, but I need to save up a lot for that. But so, yeah, at some point, but I think it was just like I felt like the US was the place I was going to be able to like achieve what I wanted to.
Save up or join the OAC Europe.
Something. I'm going to be in Switzerland and that's my plan.
Your two college coaches, both females, was that quite important to you to have a female coach, or was it by chance? And were you able to connect with them a bit better as well?
Yeah, I think my coach was Jason Michael at Westby Harriers in Bristol. So I never had a female coach before. Even my like swim coaches were all male too. So I think it wasn't necessarily like I, you know, really wanted a female coach or had a very specific kind of coach that I wanted. It was just, it kind of just worked out that way. And then, yeah, having my coach at Fresno State, Christine Engel, she was like, I really liked that, like, oh, okay, that you can connect to a female coach, like a little better on like some topics and just kind of like feel that connection. And then I was like, okay, yeah, maybe at this when I transfer, having a female coach will also be better, just kind of like navigating just like life, I guess. It felt a bit better to have a female coach. So yeah, I'm definitely like, and then Laura went on to be like one of the only professional female coaches. So yeah, it's cool to be like around that and kind of like help to, okay, let's get more female coaches, more groups, more this, more that. So I think it was, yeah, it's been cool to be involved in that, I would say.
Definitely. I think the power of, you know, female coaches is just growing more and more in the sport, and we're starting to see them, like you say, turn professional and be in these big positions as well. Mm-hmm. So that's good. So after Lara, then you decided to, because obviously, yeah, you went professional for those first couple of years with Under Armour. You're still with Under Armour now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Why did you choose to move on?
I think there was like multiple different reasons. I felt like I had kind of, it was not really anything to do with the running as such. It was more so just like, I felt I had, okay, I had been with the Lara for five years at that point. And I felt like for my life, I needed a change and just needed like, there was something just like missing. Like I said, my first year as a pro was really difficult. And I just felt like I needed to be in a different city, be in a different environment. And yeah, that's why the pull kind of to Boulder or to Flagstaff or to places like that was pretty strong, because, you know, there's like so many runners there and you're surrounded by, you know, really talented and, you know, driven people. And I felt like I just needed, honestly, just like a life change. Like, I felt like that's, sometimes change can be the wrong move, but it can also be like the move that kind of makes you like progress. And I felt like I was at that point in my life. And yeah, so I think just the development of my career and everything outside of running and all this stuff, I think it was just like, I knew it was time for me to move on. And so yeah, that's really pretty much why, I guess.
It's a legitimate reason. You've got to be happy, haven't you, outside of your training, outside of your running. And, you know, you end up with Team Boss, which is Emma Coben and Joe Bossard. Did you reach out to them? How does that whole setup work? Because obviously for a large time, it was Emma Coben's husband, right? Just coaching her. And then now they've started to form a bit more of a group over the last few years.
Yeah, so it started a long time ago now. I actually don't know how many years ago now, but yeah, Joe's been coaching Emma for a long time, and they, yeah, then just Team Boss was formed, as it were. So yeah, no, they've had a lot of girls in the past. At some points, there's been 18 people, I think, on the team, but you know, now there's just Gabby, Emma, Dom, Emma Bates, and I. So it's a small little group, but it's honestly perfect. And I think when there was a lot of people on the team, it was almost too much and a little too chaotic. So I think it's like, that's nice in college to have a lot of teammates, but I think in the pro world, where it's like way more individualized and you kind of need, everyone's different in what they need, I think having the small group is, honestly, it's been perfect. And yeah, we all have, like, it's a very good environment, very, very positive, very healthy. And I think it's, it's been amazing. But I mean, when I knew I wanted to move, my agent kind of just like, okay, let's, you know, talk to other teams, other coaches, let's try to figure out what your other options are. And a Team Boss has always been one that I've been like, that looks like the kind of setup where I think I can thrive. And so, yeah, I guess it's just like, I had a call with Joe, and when I was here in Europe in the summer, and really liked like his training philosophy. Like, he's very much like, he just does research like every day. Like, he just like loves running. I think it's just been like, I could sense that like, okay, they like know what they're doing, and they've had years and years in the sport. Like, Emma's a world champion. Like, they know what they're doing, and they know, they've had experience at these meets, which I felt like I hadn't been around that yet either. Like, so I was like, okay, if I, you know, it would be super cool to be around people that have been to these Diamond Leagues, have become world champions, have done this, have done that, have, you know, tried this, tried that, kind of experimented a little bit and know what works, know what doesn't, and, you know, can also just elevate my mindset and my training to the next level. So I felt like it was a really good fit. I loved my first conversation with Joe, and but yeah, it's been amazing. They've definitely, the first like couple months I was there, I was just, I think, just a little overwhelmed from like a new place, like new coach. Like, it's a lot. You have to kind of like give yourself a bit of grace for that and let yourself adjust. But no, they're awesome. Yeah, Joe is very, very, he will tell me all the time, you can do this, like, you can be one of the best, kind of things, and like telling me things in the fall that I was like, that's ridiculous, like, I'm not running that time, you know, in my head. But it's just like having someone there that's telling you, you can do these things, you can do this. And like, coming from him, I think it was, you know, he's seen a lot of runners, he's coached a lot of people, and I think just hearing that from him, it's like, okay, like, maybe I can kind of do this. So yeah, I'm in very, very fortunate to be in that group. And yeah, I'm excited just to be with them for, you know, until I retire. And So yeah, I'm excited.
Well, I think that's cool. So you talk about LA 2028, you now feel like you are in the right setup to take you to, you know, the best performance in 3 or 4 years time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it would be, I mean, that would be amazing. And hopefully the year after that, the world champs comes to London. So it's been pretty cool last couple of years. But yeah, I think it's just like, it's definitely gone from, okay, because I had never run a standard or anything until last indoor, when I ran, managed to get the world standard. And I was like, that was the first time I was like, oh, okay, like, that's, you just need like one result that kind of just like shows you, okay, maybe I can do this. And then this past indoor, even though I wasn't running the times I wanted to or knew I could, then finishing third at indoor, getting that medal, I was like, okay, now I've got my medal. So I've run the time the year before, I've got my medal now. Like, I just need to put the two together. So I'm hoping that, you know, this outdoor season goes well and like kind of into the next couple of years. But yeah, it's definitely been like just little moments in the last 2 years. Like, even though they've been small moments, it's just enough to be like, okay, you can do this, keep going.
Definitely. I think it's no surprise that, you know, coaches are trying to, you know, or pushing, you know, Joe's pushing you to believe in yourself. And that's often the hardest thing, especially at the level you're at now, where you're a professional, but sometimes you can feel so far from the likes of, you know, you see headlines of Fake Yegon trying to break 4 minutes to the mile. Right. And so is that, you know, again, another challenge of being a pro in your position is just believing that you can actually do what you're setting out to do.
Yeah. And I think it's also part, like, you can, you know, it's amazing that Faith is trying to break 4 and, you know, someone else is trying to break 3:55, or I don't know. There's these, you know, crazy, crazy times. And I think that I look at that and I think it's incredible. Like, I think it's amazing and, you know, good for them. But I just think for you, I'm very good, I think, kind of just staying in my own lane kind of thing. And okay, my success this season, you know, it's not if I can break the world record in the 1500. It's like, okay, can I PR? And then can I go to champs and try to medal? It's like just the little things that you have to set yourself up for. And those little wins and those celebrations can then, you know, then all of a sudden you are running 3:59 because you've just kind of worked your way there instead of having these like massive goals. So I think that's helped me, but it's also been in like training. And like I said, like Joe has been incredible at kind of like figuring out the athlete I am and kind of really, really working hard like the last 3 months and trying to kind of build a plan that I feel better with and that works for me. And we've seen like massive improvements mentally, physically, everything. So yeah, I think it's also when you see things in training that you've never done before, or you know, a year ago, if I told myself I'd done that, I would be like, that's crazy, you didn't do that. So I think it's like just little things like that in training. And then you're like, okay, these little progressions in training, maybe now I can go run a second faster or 2 seconds faster kind of thing. So
let's talk about training. We've denied the listeners long enough. What does your training look like? And specifically, I guess, yeah, what changed from when you were with Lara and now when you've moved to Joe up in Boulder? So yeah, what is a typical week looking like for you at the moment?
Well, we're on like I don't even know what kind of number scheduler you'd call it, but or 9 day week or some random thing, I don't know. Joe would kill me if he told me I was trying to tell you the exact. He doesn't go by weeks. I'm not allowed to go by weeks,
right?
So we do like, so I don't know, say we'll start with a Monday, but it would be like a workout on a Monday, and then we'd have 2 days in between and then another workout. So we do like, or a longer run, so we do like a hard day every 3 days, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So you have 2 days in between those, and that would be like, you know, just your easy runs. We kind of changed we tried to up my mileage again in the fall, which I've tried before. And I think just like being at altitude for the first time, I was very tired, kind of just like, I just didn't feel right. So we're just doing less now, which kind of feels like awesome a little bit. It's like, I just ran like a massive PR and I'm barely running any miles. So I think it's just like, that's cool too. It's just like, but we've really figured it out. Like the quality of the sessions are harder, and I do a bit of like elliptical and biking here and there on my easy days. Not currently, just like going into racing season, like the volume has come down, but the volume I was doing in terms of minutes, when you kind of add those, we would do like double days. So we would do some of the workouts we would do would be in the morning. It would be, you know, just like, say it was a day where we did like 6x mile or something, just like kind of basic like strength stuff. That would be one of our workout days. And then in the evening, we would come back and do, instead of doing a double run workout, I would do like 7 to 10 by 3 minutes on the arc trainer or the bike or something. So we would get 2 big sessions in, but yeah, my body was able to handle that a little better at altitude. And then I ended up coming off that kind of like 4 to 5 week block feeling really good. And then we went up to 9,000 feet up at Crested Butte, which is a little ski town. It's tough up there, but it was amazing this time to kind of see like my body handled it so well. I felt so good. And yeah, I felt like Joe had like a lot of credit to Joe. Obviously he had really figured out, you know, what I need and what will help me progress. And yeah, my workouts now have been much better. But yeah, our workouts tend to be like, one day will be strength, you know, and then we'll do the next day will kind of be like a harder, like an orange day. We have colors for our days to know when we're supposed to like
the push details. A little harder. It's all about the details.
Which actually has been amazing, because I'm like, okay, it's a yellow day, I know this is not going to be that tough, but it's going to be like, you got to build up, okay, I'm running the 800, but you got to build up strength too. So it's like the days I don't like, but the days I need kind of thing. And then we'll do the red days, which are my favorite days. So it's like, you know, we'll do 500s, 400s, like fast, short rest, like jogging rest even, which that kills me at altitude, like the jogging rest. Yep. You definitely, like, you just, yeah, forget ever catching your breath. It just doesn't happen. So, but yeah, we do a lot of like, just a lot of stuff that I, again, would never have imagined I can do. So it's pretty cool. So it's definitely unique way of training. You know, you're not, it's not like Tuesday workout, Friday workout, Sunday long run. It's, you know, every week is different because you're on that like every third day. But once you really get into that routine and you have it down, it's been, then I don't know, I really, really enjoy it. So yeah, it's been different, but it's been like taking lactate and all that stuff. Like I'd never done that before. So I've learned a new skill there. So yeah, I'm actually in a minute going to try to take my own lactate at my workout here. No coach, nothing. So I don't know. He's trusting me taking my own lactate. So that's pretty dangerous, but we'll give it a go.
And that's how he sets intensities off of the lactate?
A little bit. It's like, so like on a yellow day where like for me, it's like I'm just trying to get in a little bit more volume, trying to build up that strength like to get through the season. It's like, yeah, your lactate, you know, if you're super high, like you've done the day wrong. Like it's, you're not going to recover. Like you're not going to be ready for the harder days later in the week. So yeah, that's been a big tool that I've enjoyed using. And again, I've really seen, we started kind of really dialing that in after, I would say around like February, March kind of thing. And yeah, I really felt like the strongest I maybe ever had in my 800. So I'm definitely excited about where it's going. And I think the other exciting thing, and what Joe and I talk about it a lot, is like, I just did a workout 2 days ago in Boulder, like the first one I'd ever done of my life. And, you know, we changed it a bit and added, you know, another rep, added a jog rest instead of a standing rest. And I think it's, so it's just like, I'm still learning things now. And so I think that is exciting to me and to him. It's like, again, because of my slow progression, there's a lot of things that I haven't even tried and haven't even, you know, workouts I haven't attempted and all this stuff. So I think it's, that's exciting too. It's like, okay, he's going to go and do his research and be very sciencey about it. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to be here and follow along. And it's exciting for me too, to figure out like my body can do that kind of thing.
Yep. Talk about going up to Crested Butte then at 9,000 feet. Because famously, isn't that where Emma Coben lived like her whole career or her whole life? Was she not born there?
Yeah, she was in Boulder for a while and then went up to Crested Butte, and that's where she met Joe. And so, yeah, they've known each other for a long time. But no, yeah, Emma lived up there and trained up there. And that's where she, yeah, that's where she grew up. So she knows that little town. And I mean, it's amazing. It's beautiful. The first time you go, it's like, you think maybe you can like just not even run for like 5 minutes, but it's yeah, once you kind of like get the hang of it, and it's an amazing tool. And you know, then we drive down about 20 minutes to Gunnison is the town, and I think that's at like 7,800 feet or something like that,
and that feels like sea level.
Yeah, just under 8,000. And so it's kind of like, okay, if I can do a workout here,
Jesus,
yeah, like let's hope I, you know, when you go back to sea level, it's like, oh, well, this is easy. So say, yeah, it's a cool little kind of tool that, again, you know, I've never even lived at altitude. So all new things. And I'm excited to see like, okay, if I don't see all the things I want to this year, well, hopefully in 3 years, I see those things, you know?
So will you train at 9,000 feet? Or you've just been up there for a few times to do like an easy run, or you've stayed up there and you drive down?
Yeah. So the house that we stay at is at 9,000 feet. So we sleep there. And then we do some easy runs up there at 9,000 feet. You just got to like, another thing that Joe's really dialed in on is heart rate. And we do a lot of our stuff on heart rate. So now I'm a big like advocate for that, you know. I think that has also, I've seen massive changes in how I feel and stuff. It's like, okay, especially obviously if you're running at 9,000 feet, if you're going to do every easy run at whatever, your heart rate's in zone, I don't know, like you're going to be tired. So yeah, it's like, that's been kind of a fun game almost. It's like, it's been weird to run so slow. Like again, in the like 4 weeks leading up to my PR, I don't think I ran a single run under like 8 minute mile average. Like, so it's like you're doing that and you're like, am I getting fit? Like, this is crazy. But then you're crushing workouts and you're still getting the volume and the mileage. And it's just a very unique, different way of training. So I think it, you know, for some people, it just doesn't work, and they need the, you know, the stuff that they've always done and like the stuff that is more kind of known. But I think, yeah, you just kind of have to like, I don't know, just really be excited about it, open about it, and just give it a go. So, but I think I'm at coming into the team, I was at quite a unique spot, I guess, like later into my career, but still hadn't experienced a lot and hadn't tried altitude, hadn't tried taking latte, hadn't tried this, hadn't tried that kind of thing. So I was kind of in a spot where it was like, I was excited for a change. Like I wanted a change. I wanted something way different and just a whole different approach. So that was exactly what I got, basically.
No, that's very cool. And then I just want to ask about like that setup. Obviously, you're coached by Joe and there's a few of you in the group. So the house and stuff, like, do you pay for that? Your agency pays for that? Like, because you're all from different brands as well, right? So Joe is not exclusive to one brand.
No, so yeah, that's the group is also unique in that way, in that you can be sponsored by any brand to be on the team. So then so in Boulder, we're all in like separate houses, like any group. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you live, you know, with your teammates or by yourself or with your boyfriend, with, you know, whoever you want to live with, like that's who you're living with kind of deal. But we all live in like similar, I live in the same apartment complex as Gabby, as my teammate. So everyone's kind of around there, but you're all living separate and, you know, you have your own salary with your own brand. So that's on you. And when we go to training camps, we are very fortunate to stay with Emma in her house that she has in Crested Butte. And her dad still lives up in Crested Butte too, and her sister and her sister's kids. So there's a lot of support we have up there. Yeah, we're just fortunate that she has that place. It does get rented out a lot, obviously, in ski season, but then that's the time we're not there. So it kind of like works out. But yeah, super, super grateful for that opportunity and to kind of experience like Emma's Crested Butte life a little bit, you know, and it feels very, very much like a home. Like they're super welcoming and they and Emma do a lot for us girls on the team. So yeah, I definitely feel very supported. But
what's Emma's role? Is she still running?
Emma's still running.
She's still competing.
She's still crushing it. Yeah, she's amazing. She's still crushing it. She has a little daughter, so
yeah, I think that's it. I haven't seen her too much, but is she very much athlete still, or is she does she advise you guys? Is she a little bit of an assistant at any points?
She's very much the athlete and still has, I think, a lot more to give. And she, you know, she's not stopping anytime soon. She wants to compete this year and next year. And, you know, she's crushing it. Her workouts that she does are insane. Like it's pretty cool to like, kind of like, but then on the other side, it's like, okay, going in, you're like, okay, this is a world champion. Like, you know, I'm a little bit nervous to meet Emma, but she is the most humble, the most amazing friend I've ever had. And she, while she's an athlete herself, she provides a lot of advice and help to us girls. And, you know, if I have any questions or anything, she'll be the first to help and the first to guide. So she's, I love being around her, and it's very, she's very inspiring in her. It's very easy to see why she was a world champion. You can just spend a week with her and you'll know. Yeah, I think it's just like her dedication and her habits and her schedule and just the way she goes about everything has also elevated me, you know.
It always rubs off, right? Yeah, if you're around people like that, it rubs off on you.
And I think it's also just, okay, she's super dedicated, does all the little things, is, you know, all that stuff. But she's also just Emma. Like she's just, you know, she's human like the rest of us and goes through really tough patches, goes through all these emotions and, like, you know, has life too. So I think it's just kind of saying that these athletes at the top, they are just like you. They're just working hard every day and going through ups and downs just like you are. So, you know, that's also been really cool to see, like, okay, they're not doing anything like insanely crazy or things you don't know about, like things in training that you've never heard of, kind of thing. So it's just like, okay, I've seen this. And so that gives you motivation too.
I think, yeah, there's definitely a trust that what you're doing definitely works because you've seen the success of that program before as well. So as we finish up then, let's talk about your race schedule. You're back in the UK now. You talk about doing solo workouts. So that's going to be fun for you. But you have got a few races lined up across Europe. And so how's the rest of the summer look?
Yeah, it's looking exciting, honestly. June is kind of like a little season in itself here in Europe. So I'll go to Finland coming up. Going to continue living my 800 dreams. Going to race another 800. So that's fun. and then I'll go to Portugal to run a 1500, and then I'm actually going to meet Gabby and Joe in Paris. Gabby has the Diamond League in Paris. Watch out for Gabby this season. She's going to go for that American record in Steeplechase, so I'm super excited for her in that. So I'll meet her in Paris with Joe and watch Gabby in the Diamond League, and then 2 days later I have my own 1500 just outside of Paris. So it's kind of fun to kind of meet everyone up again in Europe. And so that's like a little European schedule. And then in July, I'll go back to Boulder, do like 2 to 3 weeks of training again, just kind of reset. And then I'll come back in August and back for trials and kind of go from there. But yeah, I'm hoping to just, June is okay, let's get some consistent racing. Can we PR in the 1500? Like, all this, it's been pretty difficult to get into some meets. That's also been in development in the last 3 years. It's now super difficult to get into anything, especially coming off an Olympic year. If you're not, you know, one of the names in the Olympics, it's pretty hard to get anything. So that's been difficult. But again, I'm just, you know, with the opportunities I have, I'll do what I have with the opportunity and try to kind of progress from there. And hopefully if I keep progressing, then more opportunities open up, kind of thing. So
no, yeah, that's a cool
maybe,
schedule.
Maybe getting a BMC at some point, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good. Is there a temptation to do the steeple at any point? Obviously, yeah, Joe being a steepler, Emma, Gabby, you know, it's you'd have
no,
a good setup
people
for
ask
it.
That, but no, definitely no. Not. No.
So the,
I mean, I've never even discussed it with Joe, but he yeah. knows that.
He knows again, he's off limits. Never going to happen.
Yeah, I love the 800. Like, that is my secret, like, dream. But I think that, yeah. The 8 and the 15 is what I want to compete in. And, you know, until that starts going seriously downhill, maybe I would be like, okay, I'm going to try something else. But for now, I really enjoy those events. And I think they're super, I mean, obviously it's biased, but I think they're two of the most exciting events on the track. So yeah. I think that, yeah, I want to be part of that. And yeah.
Do you think looking at this year, is it a gold qualifier for the world? Is it a possibility?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it's definitely a goal for sure. I guess it's always, you know, I'm yet to make a team, not even a junior team. Like I've never made a team. So yeah, that's always a goal. But I mean, it's tough in Great Britain, especially in the women's 1500. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. You got to beat some big names. So, and then you've also got to run the standard, like kind of the ranking stuff in Great Britain is a little bit tricky. So it's just, you know, running the standard is plan A. So yeah, this year British Athletics has two, like the A and B standard. So I guess, you know, plan A is try to at least get the B standard and then kind of go from there. But no, it's definitely a goal. And I think getting a medal indoor, I mean, there were some big names that weren't there, granted, but I think just getting that medal and saying like, okay, I can stay with them that last 300-400 meters and kind of believing in that. I think it's a little bit like a lot of times I go into champs and you're just kind of like, okay, I'm going to finish sixth kind of thing. Like, so it's the five big names up the front and then it's the rest of us kind of deal. So I'm just excited to kind of be in the mix of that. And there's a lot of other girls like up and coming that I think can also be in the mix of that top five. So I think it's just about us kind of inserting ourselves into that mix and not being afraid to be up the front of that race.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Ellie, it's been a pleasure. It's been a great podcast. So thank you very much for coming on and wish you the best of luck this summer.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.